you were here a couple weeks ago, I shared that I had tried to memorize the Sermon on the Mount. And then I tried to do it in front of you, and it didn't work very well. But over the past days and weeks, when I get up early in the morning, I sit down, and instead of sitting down with my Bible, I sit down and I close my eyes and I recite the Sermon on the Mount. And it's hard to describe to you what that does to someone when you ponder and think about and review in your heart and mind the words of Jesus, especially in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapters 5-7. When we read through the Sermon on the Mount, there's a few things that should happen. It should hit our heart. It should give us a greater vision of what God is calling us to be, who God is calling us to be. It should pierce us as well. And so as I've done this, that's what's happened to me. And my hope is this morning that when we come again to Matthew chapter 6, it is today, that that happens to us this morning, that we get a grander vision of who God is, that our hearts are pierced, that we're encouraged. There was a rich young man. And he ran up to Jesus, and he falls on his knees, and he says, "Master, what do I do to inherit eternal life?" Have you heard this story before? Just 2 weeks ago, you heard this story from me. Jesus says, "You want to inherit eternal life? Here's what you should do. Don't murder. Don't steal. Don't commit adultery. Don't lie about your neighbor. Honor your father and mother." And he says, "But Jesus, I've done that since I was a boy." Jesus looks at him with love. Jesus says he loved this young man. And he says, "If you want to be perfect." Anybody here want to be perfect? No? No one wants to be perfect. Not even a try. If you want to be perfect, go, sell what you have, give it to the poor, then come and follow me. And the young man, he went away sad because he had so many great possessions. If you've got your Bible, let's open up to our passage for the day. We've been journeying through the Sermon on the Mount, as I was saying, and last week Caleb started out chapter 6 for us, and we talked about giving to the needy and prayer and fasting and how we're supposed to do that so everyone can see us. You all agree? So that no one can see us, so that our giving and our praying and our fasting is in secret, then your heavenly Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. Then, we skipped a whole part here, because we're talking about money or treasures in heaven. We skipped the Lord's Prayer. That's because next weekend we're hearing the Lord's Prayer. We have a guest speaker who wants to do the Lord's Prayer, so they're not available until next weekend. So come out next weekend to hear about the Lord's Prayer. But we skip over that today, which lands us in treasures in heaven. When you think about treasures, what comes to your mind? What do you think of? Children. Man, you're good. When I think of treasures, I think of chests full of gold, like gold overflowing, and like I think of pirates with the patch over one eye, and they're like, that's treasure. I mean, that's what I think of when I think of treasure, treasures. But I wonder, when it says here treasures in heaven, or treasures at all, what it might be talking about. Okay, so we're in Matthew chapter 6, verse 19. "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, no pirate boxes overflowing with gold, where moths and vermin destroy." Vermin? "Where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, And where thieves do not break in and steal, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. When you hear that passage, you understand why when I sit on the couch at 6:30 in the morning and I review these words, that it challenges me and it confronts me, and I'm not sure what to do with these words. Can you read that? You cannot serve God and money. What is Jesus saying? Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. What happens to, maybe not so much in our culture, but a piece of clothing when a moth gets to it? Destroys it. It destroys the piece of clothing. Jesus is saying, don't store up pieces of clothing. I mean, who here stores up clothing? Anybody? Oh, maybe. But in the context of the day, clothing was as valuable as your car is to you. Moths destroy clothing. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin. What is vermin? Strange word, I don't hear that one. It just basically means consumable stuff. It can even mean food, rust, corrosion. In other words, vermin comes, whatever that vermin thing is. I mean, I think of rats when I think of vermin. But it does mean more than that in the scriptures here. Rats will destroy something for sure. You put stuff in your shed and they come in and they destroy your sleeping bags and stuff like that. Just wreck it. So don't store up for yourselves treasures. Treasures. You know what that word actually means? Here's a way of saying it. Don't store up stored up stuff. Don't store up stored up stuff. Wealth. Don't accumulate it, Jesus is saying. But I mean, if you have a head on your shoulders today, you're thinking like me, storing up stuff like makes some sense too. I mean, aren't we supposed to like watch out for ourselves and take care of ourselves? And, you know, am I meant to live in a tent or something? Probably not. Don't store up stored up stuff. But then again, you might ask, why do people store up stuff? What's the purpose of that? Often it's for security of some type, right? I mean, when I become 65, I'd like something left. I mean, if I'm going to store up stuff so that I'm okay and I'm not vulnerable, I'm going to think about the things in my shed and what's important to me, and I'm going to keep doing that. But often it's got a connection to security, right? Comfort and pleasure. The storing up, stored up stuff, security, comfort, and pleasure. My youngest son, when we talk about money, he often reminds me that money is very helpful. He says, you know, if you have all the money in the world, like there's less worries. I mean, you can do whatever you want to do. You're not worried about what the future is going to look like. And I mean, I have to agree that having money does seem to make life less stressful. You know, I think of if you could go to the keg every night and you had a supercar, and as soon as the Thunder Bay roads destroyed your supercar, you could buy a new one, then that would be a good day. But the reality is today, honestly, a lot of us don't even own that much money, probably, today. And so you think about money and you ask, like, what is Jesus saying here? You might take it beyond money. What about the job that you have right now? What about the security that you find in that job, knowing that every day you're going to wake up and this job is is going to be here 10 years from now. Does that not give you a sense of security? I mean, maybe even the government money you're receiving of some type. Does that not give you a sense of security that life's going to maybe be okay? Maybe instead of your treasure box full of gold, like I imagine, maybe it's multiple Netflix accounts or, you know, something that brings you comfort. Maybe it's cars and houses. And Jesus is just making it simple here. He just says, listen, don't store up that stored up stuff. Why? Because it can be destroyed. It's insecure. And we're thinking, what? Insecure? Because this stuff makes me feel secure. And Jesus comes across that and he says, it is insecure. It will not last. And Jesus says, like, actually, it's really unwise to store it up. It's just unwise. But why? We're going to find out as we move on. But store up for yourselves stored up stuff, treasures in heaven, where there are no moths and no rats and no vermin, and where thieves never break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart is also. For where your treasure is, there your heart is also. And it's almost like Jesus is saying, like, listen, all that stored up stuff you can accumulate, it's nothing compared to what can be, compared to what I'm preparing for you. You talk about security, like real security. Think about me and my kingdom and what's coming. That's real security. That's going to last. One day, life is going to end as you know it. And you will have stored up treasures in heaven where there's no moth and thief, nothing. Oh, imagine my life ending and I'm in heaven and I'm there for my stored up treasure, am I not? I mean, I'm storing up treasure there. So there must be a bank account that says Jeremy Darrow. Hopefully it's got a pretty decent amount of change in there. I'm like, not going to show any of you my password. Store up treasure in heaven? Like, is that how it works when we get there? We have a bank account full of kingdom bucks? That's not original, by the way. What is treasure in heaven? How does this work? I think we have a clue if we turn a little bit later into Matthew chapter 25. It should be on the screen. We'll read Matthew chapter 25. What is this treasure in heaven? This secure thing, this thing that just is going to be there. So it starts Matthew chapter 25, verse 31. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people from one another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, your reward. The kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did it for me. Maybe that's a clue. Treasure in heaven? Maybe treasure in heaven, maybe this reward in heaven is this inheritance that God is doing for us, is gathering for us so that there's this eternal kingdom that we're going to enter. And maybe the way that you store that up is by the way that you treat, that we treat one another. The way which we notice those that are in prison, that are sick, that are not clothed. Maybe that is how we store up that treasure. That is how that reward becomes something. I imagine as we go through life, imagine myself there on Judgment Day, or imagine myself there in front of Jesus, and the words that I want to hear are, "Well done, you good and faithful servant. Enter into my joy." What greater reward might there be for you and I than to hear those words one day? And Jesus is saying, the way you get that reward, it's not through storing up stored up stuff. It is through storing up treasures in heaven. And treasures in heaven, they have a lot to do with how we treat and care for each other. For where your treasure is, there your heart is also. And I think we all intrinsically know that. You know what's most important to us? That's where our heart is. That's the thing we're going to talk about. Dream about, think about where our treasure is, there our heart is also. The word for heart, your heart, is your desires, your intentions, your will. That's why people say things like, "I've invested my heart and soul in this business. I've invested my heart and soul in my kids." And then something happens to our business or our kids and we spiral. At least for a while, because we place so much treasure there. Treasure. Someone thought you were a treasure. You were a treasure worth giving their own life for. Jesus is the one that laid down his life for you, his treasure. When you think of your fellow human beside you, on your left or your right, they too are created in God's image. They are a treasure to be valued, to be cared for. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. The eye is the lamp of the body. This is probably one of the things that I wrestled over to try to understand what is Jesus saying. And I actually think it's a riddle. So hopefully I can unpack the riddle. The eye is the lamp of the body. When we interact with each other, we look in each other's eyes. It's like the eye is the window to the soul. It's like where the real you is. It's like, I don't look at your hand or something. I look in your eyes. There's something significant about the eyes. Your eyes are the lamp of the body. There's like light coming out. So if your eyes are healthy, like I got great vision, my eyes are healthy, then your whole body will be full of light. That's not what it means. Your eyes are healthy like that. The Greek for this is actually really hard to translate. It's only used once in the whole New Testament, this word. So that's why when you read different versions, you get different versions of this word. You get words like single, if your eye is single, if your eye is generous, if your eye is clear, if your eye is sincere, your whole body will be full of light. So if the eye is the lamp of the body, and if your eyes are healthy, that's what matters, or generous. What can this mean? Well, if you go back to Proverbs, you get a really fantastic clue. But I'm not going to give you that clue until we read the negative side of this. But if your eyes are unhealthy or evil, your whole body is going to be full of darkness. Full of darkness. And if the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? Jesus. Oh, man, this is tough, Jesus. If the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? Proverbs 28:22. Listen to this. He who hurries for wealth is a man with an evil eye. Interesting. So in the Hebrew thought, stingy or evil, it was connected to your eye, and it was connected to money. He who hurries for wealth is a man with an evil eye, but he does not know that poverty will come upon him. Or Proverbs 23. Listen, while dining with a ruler, pay attention to what is put before you. If you are a big eater, put a knife to your throat. Don't desire all the delicacies, for he might be trying to trick you. Don't wear yourself out trying to get rich. Be wise enough to know when to quit. In the blink of an eye, wealth disappears, for it will sprout wings and fly away like an eagle. Don't eat with people who are stingy of eye. Don't desire their delicacies. They are always thinking about how much it costs. Eat and drink, they say, but they don't mean it. You hear that? They're always thinking about how much it costs. Eat and drink, they say, but they don't mean it. You will throw up what little you've eaten, and your compliments will be wasted. Really, what I think Jesus is getting at here is, are you a generous person? Are you generous? Or do you sit down with someone at a meal? Or do you walk into the church on Sunday and you act very generous in front of everyone? But in your heart, in my heart, am I thinking, I sure hope they don't ask me for anything? You sure make it look like, oh yeah, if anyone asked me for anything, I'd be more than happy to help. But in your heart, you're saying something quite different. And so, you sit down at a, that's what Proverbs is saying, you sit down at a table for dinner, and this person with the unhealthy eye is saying, like, go ahead, eat and drink. But inside they're like, don't eat anything. I don't want you to, because it's my food and it's my stuff. And I don't want you to take more than you should, because it's going to wear me out. It has an angle of deception to it. Because Jesus is saying, like, yeah, those shining eyes of you, that lamp, that they look so inviting and gracious, but how many people know that what we present on the outside, which reminds me a lot of Caleb's sermon last week, what we present on the outside isn't what's on the inside necessarily. So we have these generous-looking eyes, and we act a certain way, but inside we're doing something quite different, and we are deceptive. Jesus says, if that's the way you are, and the light that you have, instead of it actually being light like you think it is, you're full of darkness, full of darkness. The Bible Project team puts it this way. How one casts an eye on a neighbor, so how one looks at a neighbor in their heart, can either shut off possibility for flourishing and abundance, or it can open up opportunities. The stingy person, the person with the evil eye, sits at the table and says, don't take more than I want you to take from me. And the generous person sits at the table with someone and says, I'm hopeful that our interaction today can bless you and help you and can just be awesome in your life. That's the difference of the two people. Because no one can serve two masters. Either you're going to hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Jesus, isn't that like a little bit extreme? Because, I mean, I have two employers. You can, kind of, can't you? But you think about it. I do have two employers right now, Transformation Church and Northwind. But if one asks something over the other, what's going to happen? I have to choose. I have to choose one or the other. And so this comes down to a question of our allegiance or our priorities. God is saying something to us here of either you serve money or you follow after or that's your life's goal and you are trying to be secure with your securities or, as the Bible Project says, bond with your bonds. You're trying to do something for yourself, or you are wholeheartedly putting God first. Putting God first. See, some of us read these verses and we look at it as a rule. We're looking for, like, how much generosity do I need to have, or how much money do I need to give to, like, I don't know, to, like, get through fine? A common church number that we talk about is 10%. We tithe 10%. You see, this goes way beyond that. Way beyond that. As a matter of fact, even tithing in the Old Testament was more like 10 to 20%. So if 10% was relaxing. But this isn't even about a percentage. It's not about that. It's about something more than that. It's about something, well, kingdom treasure. So it's not rules about, like, tithing or not, or a percentage. It's not rules about that, well, you can't save money. It's not rules about, well, you must give all your money away. And it's not even permission to feel judgy toward other people who you think have more money than you. Because now you can read this verse and be like, you're not being generous. So what is this saying to us? What is the vision of Jesus here? And I am telling you today that I'm sure that I have not done justice to the biblical vision of this that God is asking. But I can tell you one thing I'm sure of, that it's a lifestyle. This is a lifestyle. It is a switch of worldviews. Instead of the common worldview, which is like, I'm going to build my little bit of security here on this planet so that everything will be okay, or my massive amount of security here on this planet, I am going to put my energy and my hope and my focus into this kingdom that's coming. This kingdom that's coming, it's so secure, nothing is ever going to stop it. And when I get there, everything is going to be perfect. And Jesus says, hey, listen, to invest in that kingdom, you start right now. You care for the person beside you. You love me with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Now, this kind of generosity, the biblical vision of it is something like, there's enough to go around, guys. There's enough money to go around. So watch out for each other. When someone's in need now, you help them out. And when you're in need, someone else is going to help you out. It's this generous caring and loving for each other that goes well beyond tithing on a Sunday morning. You see, if you put your hope there, Jesus would say, it's just unreliable. It's going to evaporate on you one day. And honestly, even if it doesn't evaporate on you before you're 95, it's going to be gone when you die, or at least you'll be gone. And then what's going to happen to it? That money that you have, it was given to you. The resources that you have, they were given to you. For what? To bless other people. Not to be used only in a way that's for myself, to build my kingdom, to give myself my pleasure and my security and my comfort. It was given to you for a reason, to bless other people. I'm thinking that we could talk for a long time about money, but I think it comes down to just this simple. If we place ourselves, our entire selves, including our money and our possessions before God, and in the context of this, we open our hands up and our hearts up, and we just say, I am yours. I am yours. My stuff is yours. Here's the money you gave me, Lord. How can I best use it to store up treasure in heaven? But practically, what more could it mean? And I hope you permit me to tell a story about my parents, because their lives have impacted me with their generosity. I grew up in a family-run business, which still exists to this day, and they create an enormous amount of profit. But did you know something? That business was started to produce a profit, to share that profit with ministries all over the world. And as I watched my parents in this family business, a business in which you could strike it rich, in which you could buy the pleasures of this life, they kept a simple life. They lived in a home that was not very fancy, and they did not seem to buy lots of toys or comforts. No, they weren't living at poverty level or anything like that. But it was clear to me that they had made a decision that they had something greater in mind than just their own comfort, as did the other business owners. So because of this mindset that they had, I had the opportunity to travel to places like the Philippines or Morocco and Egypt and be with people and hopefully bless people that had a whole lot less than us. I got chances to go onto the streets of Woodstock, New Brunswick, and help those who lived outside on the streets in our hometown. It seemed like they were motivated by something different than just building something for themselves. To this day, they have decided to sponsor a couple of families from countries like Turkey or Iran, where it is dangerous to be a Christian. And they have almost single-handedly, to my knowledge, sponsored that entire move, rented apartments for a couple years at times, out of their own pocket. They live in a simple home. That, I think, is a vision of what Jesus is calling us to, where something other than our own comfort motivates us, where we do something because we belong to this great big family of God, where one day there will be no more tears or suffering or crying or pain. One day when we will live for eternity. And that family, it begins now. And that family we're invested in now with our time and resources and our money. But I should tell you something about my dad and my mom. You see, they made those decisions when they had enough money, when they had a retirement planned. And even though they lived simply, they lived definitely sufficiently. They had planned on a lifelong job, one that would stay constant and steady. Well, guess what happened about 2 years ago? Something changed in their work environment, and they had to buy a new home. They were renting. They did not have a home to sell. So suddenly, they were faced with a cost that they had not anticipated. And I could tell the strain on my parents as they went through that move and that decision. But what it makes me think in that is that they still, in the midst of that, they chose something of greater value because they loved God and because they loved people. In other words, they could have saved all that, and maybe when their job changed later down the road, they would have maybe had more money. But I've also seen God is taking care of them. And that's the promise here. It's not just that we're meant to unload ourselves and hope it all works out, but that when we care for others, God will see to it that we are cared for by Him. And so I've seen, even though the stress was there, the pain was there, because of these decisions my parents made, They're doing okay. They have invested in the lives of others. And I am partly who I am today because of that generosity. I'm probably here in Thunder Bay because of that. I'm going to call the band up at this time. And I could tell so many more stories of people's generosity. I think of Gene, who invited me to live in his home for months when I first came to Thunder Bay. I think of Nathan, where I slept on his couch in his own home. Like this kingdom mindset that says, we're part of something that God is doing. And I wonder, when you think about yourself and you think about the needs around you, maybe the needs of this neighborhood. I think of ministries like Transformation of Northwind, Grace Place, many more. What do you think God could do in this community right here if we just simply said, God, here I am. Use me. Use my money. Use my time. Use my resources. I'm investing in the lives of others for the glory of the kingdom. There was a rich young ruler. He came up to Jesus and he fell on his knees and he said, what do I do to have eternal life? And Jesus says, listen, if you want to be perfect, go sell everything you have, give it to the poor, and then come follow me. What did the rich young ruler do? He left, he went away sad because he had many riches. Do you want to be perfect today? You know that perfection, in Jesus' definition here, is perfection is doing the next right thing. Being obedient to Jesus in the next thing. That is perfection in this context. What is Jesus asking of you today? Are we going to go away sad because we had something we could not part with? Or are we willing to offer up what we have to God and say, God, use me. God, use my stuff according to your purpose and to your glory. So the band's going to close us with a couple songs, but I invite you to just lean into this in these last few moments. Open up your heart. Open your hands up. God, here I am. If you want to come forward for prayer, we would love to pray with you.